My name is Leonidas, and this is Informed Dissent.
What's up, guys? Welcome to episode 23 of Informed Dissent, the podcast where we push back on the culture of groupthink and challenge the narrative. I hope you're having a great week. Mine has been a bit stressful, to be honest, because I find myself continually frustrated with the state of our country. I am just so sick of it. And I told you guys earlier that I am tired of talking about race. And I am. I would love nothing more than to never talk about it ever again. It would be amazing. But I can't get away from it. Every podcast, we have to talk about it. I spend an inordinate amount of time talking about it on social media. I spend an inordinate amount of time talking about it here on the podcast. And I hate it. When people often ask me, generally in bad faith, if I hate talking about race, why do I talk about it so much? As if I'm the one initiating this stuff, right? Yeah, no, I feel like I have to talk about it because the racial narratives that are being driven in the mainstream media, in our entertainment, in our schools, in our academia, in corporate culture, and increasingly in government, are so extremely toxic and destructive. They cannot be left alone without challenge and rebuttal. It's like if the prevailing narrative in the culture becomes the earth is flat, I'm sure the remaining sensible people would feel compelled to spend a significant amount of time to the point of being utterly sick of talking about it, explaining why the earth is actually round. And then, of course, these circus clowns would ask them, well, why do you talk about the earth so much if you hate talking about it? As long as there's darkness, we have to do everything we can to shed light on it. That's how I feel about it. I retweeted a quote by Thomas Sowell yesterday. He said, "We are among the biggest fools in history if we keep paying people to make us hate each other." And we are. We're absolutely among the biggest fools in history. And it's worse for us because we have all of these technological advancements that provide us with the ability to learn anything we want to and have the entirety of history at our fingertips. And yet we spend our time reenacting high school and repeating history's mistakes. The whole conversation around race in this country is just frustratingly idiotic. It helps nobody. Zero people are helped. No one's life is enriched. Now, people do get rich. These race hustlers, they profit big time off of this stuff. The race grift is extremely lucrative. But ultimately, they aren't really helped either because they're destroying their own souls in the process, along with destroying the whole country. It's all toxic, all of it. And I'm just so tired of it. I'm tired of black people curling up in the fetal position and acting like fragile children. I'm tired of white people self-flagellating and acting like black people's parents. I'm tired of people seeing racism in every innocuous look or remark. I'm tired of politicians using it all as a weapon. You know, we like to pretend that we're smarter and more enlightened than those who came before us throughout history. But man, look at us. Look at what we're doing to ourselves. We are not. We are a nation of imbeciles. Emotional and delusional imbeciles. We make the exact same mistakes that they made. And yet we trot around with our noses in the air. We're self-important fools. And I know I have listeners from other countries outside of America, and I can't speak for your specific country, though this phenomenon does seem to be sweeping the West in general. But regardless, I just want to shake people and scream at them to wake up, no matter where they are. Which is ironic because they call themselves woke, but they're not woke. They're in a dang coma, with no awareness of what is actually going on in reality. You cannot possibly be some enlightened intellectual when you treat immutable characteristics like skin color as central to identity and use it to drive hostility toward others who do not share those characteristics. That is not the behavior of an enlightened intellectual. It is the behavior of a knuckle-dragging idiot who is being used by other idiots to repeat history's mistakes. And look, there will always be hate in the world, okay? I mean, always. People will always find a reason to hate others. We'll never get rid of it. But to allow race to be treated as central to identity and to allow it to become socially acceptable to treat people negatively based on that is indefensible. To allow racial demagoguery to enter the mainstream and actually implement programs and strategies to attack people based on their skin color is indefensible. History has taught us these painful and tragic lessons over and over and over again. How many more lessons do you need? I am sick of it. As you guys know, a man in Atlanta shot and killed 8 people at several different massage parlors a couple days ago. This guy is white, and 6 of the 8 people he killed were Asian Americans. That's all the information we need, right? We know everything there is to know now. That's what the media pundits said. That's what they thought. It was immediately an example of white supremacist anti-Asian violence. Who cares about facts? We don't need them. If that feels familiar, it's because it happens every single time. Jump to conclusions, establish the narrative, hold on tightly to confirmation bias, and just run with it. Who cares about truth? Of course, it turned out that this guy has serious mental health issues, and he's claiming that he's a sex addict, and he just wanted to remove temptation. That was his motivation. So the guy's crazy. He's nuts. But he's a white supremacist out to kill Asians. Even though 2 of the people he killed weren't even Asian. It's not important. Immaterial. Doesn't fit the narrative. But here's the thing. These people don't care. They're far more concerned with figuring out a way to pin white supremacy on this guy than they are about the fact that 8 people were killed. They don't really care that people were killed. They don't care that they were Asian Americans. They don't. And I've talked about this before, but they only care about what they can use to manipulate others in a given moment. They use race as a weapon, racism as a tool to further their agenda. This whole idea of whiteness being dangerous is obviously absurd, but they use it and latch on to whatever they can find that might help them advance that narrative. That's why this is national news and why it's being pushed everywhere. But the 2 black teenagers setting a white disabled man on fire and killing him in Rochester, New York, gets no mentions. I mean, had you even heard of that story before this podcast, before I just said it? That just happened last week. Why isn't there the same energy for things like that? What motivated those kids to do that? And you want to talk about dangerous rhetoric? Whose rhetoric led to that happening? No, we don't hear about it. Swept under the rug. There's been ongoing violence against Asian Americans in cities like San Francisco, but not by white supremacists, by black people. And the media never wants to report the race when this happens. They never frame it as part of some much larger problem unless they're using it to blame white people. In 2018, according to the BJS, 27.5% of violent incidents against Asian Americans were committed by black people, compared to 24.1% of incidents committed by white people. How can you possibly look at that and conclude that white supremacy is the problem? How? I mentioned, I think, last episode or maybe the episode before, the case where the black guy killed the elderly Asian American man out in California. And then the community held a march against white supremacy. They blamed white people. What the heck is going on here? White people cannot be responsible for everything, guys. They just can't. At some point, people have to be responsible for themselves. My goodness. You guys know that I had been keeping a running list of children killed in street violence on my website and on Twitter. And I haven't updated it in a while because, well, I needed to take a break from it. I mean, it was taking an emotional toll on me. And I had to stop dwelling on such awful tragedies every single day. It was really getting to me. But there were at least 74 children under the age of 13 who were gunned down in street violence last year. 74 children under the age of 13. Not a single one of them got anywhere near the type of national energy that we're seeing right now from this shooting in Atlanta. I mean, Sequoia Turner, a little 8-year-old girl, she was killed in Atlanta during one of the BLM riots. How is it possible that this shooting against Asian Americans, as tragic as it is, and it is tragic, but how is it possible that it's considered an infinitely bigger problem than what happened to these kids? I mean, my goodness, we're talking about 74 kids under the age of 13. Babies, 1-year-old, 2 years old, 3 years old. And we're talking about probably close to 600 under the age of 18. And nothing? No national conversation? No pronouncement of a crisis? Nothing? This is what irks me about this conversation. It's not about fixing problems. It never is. It's about exploiting certain situations that are politically expedient and using them for political gain. That's what it's about. There was an article in the LA Times entitled, "Hiking Has a Diversity Problem, and these bi-POC groups are working to fix it." It's just, oh man. So the LA Times tweeted this out with the link to this article, and they said, "Longtime oppression and historical barriers have kept many people of color from feeling comfortable in the American outdoors. Now, that may be changing thanks to bi-POC groups across the country working to make outdoors more inclusive." What? How are they finding racism in hiking? I mean, what are birds flying by dropping racial slurs? Do mosquitoes only bite black people? What is going on here? How on earth is hiking a diversity problem? You know, it wasn't even until recently I found out what bi-POC meant. And if you're thinking that it's probably something dumb, you're correct. Bi-POC, I don't even know if I'm pronouncing that correctly, but I don't care. But it means black, indigenous, and people of color. The acronyms just keep growing. Just like LGBTQ+, it's foolishness. Why do we need all these identity labels anyway? It's nonsense. Everyone now needs their own special little acronym so they can feel unique. And then we end up with clownishness like, we need more bi-POC and hiking. It's so dumb. All of it is just so intellectually bankrupt. It's exasperating. And why do we even care so much about diversity anyway? You know, Everything is about diversity. Is diversity this, diversity that? We need more diversity. But do we though? Is diversity really, truly a strength? Because it seems to me that diversity is only a strength when it occurs naturally, where diverse strengths naturally complement each other. That's where diversity works. Forced diversity, that is, diversity for diversity's sake, is inherently a weakness because it literally involves prioritizing superficial differences over strength and capability. That's the whole point of it. You add less qualified people because they add to some superficial diversity quota. And such decisions can only lead to weaker outcomes than there otherwise would have been. That's the logical conclusion. And these kind of weaknesses are readily apparent when people seek uniformity based on superficial factors instead of strength and capability. That doesn't really apply to the hiking article because that article is just idiotic. It makes no sense. Anyone can hike at any time. Nothing's stopping you from hiking. And the world remains unaffected whether you choose to hike or not. It really doesn't matter. But when people talk about we need more diversity in like corporate settings or academia or something like that, then we have problems because you're intentionally driving weaker outcomes for the sake of some superficial nonsense. And it doesn't actually help anybody. Like, you admit someone to MIT based on superficial factors like race and not their actual capability. You aren't helping that person. You're setting them up to fail or at best to struggle to keep up. It makes everything weaker. But in the age of emotions and feels, nobody wants to hear that. It's heresy to even suggest it. I learned a while ago that our current culture is obsessed with appearances. Optics, to borrow the political term. Obsessed with how others see them. And social media hasn't helped with that at all. But what I found is that this obsession with how people see you is where it ends for many people. They only care about the optics. They don't care about the underlying essence of the thing. And we've all heard the term virtue signaling, and that's essentially what it is, signaling one's virtue, but without necessarily being virtuous. I've called it photo op philanthropy. It's where people will say or do something to give the impression of being a good person without actually having to be one. And it's pretty clever, actually. I mean, if that's how you get your social credit, is by appearing to be a good person, and then you don't have to put in the work of actually being a good person. And we've talked about it before, but these people pretend to hold all of these deeply held convictions that will win them virtue points in the moment. Like talking about girl power and the unique strength of womanhood, for example. But then later declaring that they're chest feeders with front holes and that men can play their sports. Because they don't believe it. They don't believe anything they say. They're just they're doing whatever they think they need to do or whatever they need to say in the moment to get that virtue point or that social credit. One day they're yelling about kids in cages, calling them concentration camps. And the next day, it's all good. And they're calling them migrant holding facilities. One day they're lamenting the horrors of Asian American discrimination and oppression under the boot of white supremacy. But then the next day, when it's advantageous, they're back to discriminating against Asian Americans in college applications. They are constantly talking out of both sides of their mouth, constantly. But that's what happens when you rely on emotional reasoning and your only real goal is to manipulate others and exploit events for personal and political gain. It's about power, not principle. Well, to further our descent into utter madness, the NYPD has announced that they're going to start warning people over hurtful comments. According to the New York Post, Mayor de Blasio has ordered the NYPD to issue warnings for discrimination that isn't criminal. Guys, what are we doing? I feel like we're living in a cartoon. It's like an episode of Family Guy. This cannot be real life. Are you kidding me? Cops are now going to be literally policing speech, issuing warnings, but warnings for now. No one in their right mind thinks that this ends at warnings. And this has always been the danger, right? People frame these things as if they are morally infallible and cannot be disagreed with, right? Police stopping hate speech. Okay, that's great. Who would oppose that? Who supports hate speech on the surface? But the problem is, who gets to define what hate speech is? Who gets to decide what speech is unacceptable? That's the problem. It's subjective. And as Jordan Peterson likes to say, the people who end up defining hate speech are the very last people you would ever want to do it. That's the issue. New York is just spiraling out of control at this point. Both Cuomo and de Blasio have been disasters. I can't believe New Yorkers just keep putting up with it. It just keeps getting worse. Unbelievable. Things are also beginning to unravel in the woke world of pop culture. Well, I say beginning to unravel, but pop culture has been a dumpster fire for a long time, as we know. But you know it's bad when leftists start getting the mob coming after them and the monster starts eating its own. And that's what happened to Sharon Osbourne after an episode of The Talk where she defended Piers Morgan, which Piers also had the mob come after him and label him an evil racist because he had criticized Meghan Markle's interview with Oprah and called her a liar. Said he didn't believe anything she was saying, which honestly is a perfectly reasonable position because a lot of what she said was hard to believe. But in this day and age, you're not allowed to criticize people on the left with brown skin. And if you do, you are a racist automatically. No further evidence needed. This, of course, doesn't apply to conservatives or libertarians with brown skin because you can criticize us all you want. You can use racially charged language like Uncle Tom, and no one will accuse you of racism. Kind of wild how that works out. But anyway, I digress. So, Piers ended up leaving the set of Good Morning Britain after being accused of racism on the air for, again, just criticizing Meghan Markle, and he ultimately left the show for good. Well, Sharon Osbourne defended Piers, and one of her co-hosts, Cheryl Underwood, said that Sharon was validating Piers' racism, or that people would perceive that she was validating Piers' racism. And they got into a heated back and forth about it. These people, man, everything is racism to these people. I don't know. And at one point, Sharon Osbourne challenges Underwood to educate her on what exactly Piers said that was racist. And this is the kicker. Underwood said, "It's not the exact words of racism. It's the implication and the reaction to it." Just the fact that he was dismissive of Markle and disbelieving of her story was all the evidence of racism that they needed. What planet are we living on? Just criticizing a black woman is racism. And then defending a person who criticizes a black woman is also racism. And it's just unbelievable. I don't even agree with either of their politics. I think both Piers and Sharon are wrong about a whole lot of stuff. We disagree on all kinds of things, but what is happening to them is absolutely abhorrent. And I will defend them all day long because This woke disease needs to be squashed. And all of these other woke idiots are deluding themselves if they think it's not going to eventually happen to them too. Alexi McCammond is another leftist who felt the wrath of the woke mob recently. She was hired to be editor-in-chief at Teen Vogue, but the cancel mob came after her after some old tweets surfaced from when she was 17 years old. She was a teenager. I don't even know what she said. She said something about Asians, but I mean, it really doesn't matter. She was 17. She was 17. She's 26 now, almost 27. So we're talking about something that happened almost 10 years ago and something that happened when she was a teenager. I mean, are you kidding me with this? Now, part of me wants to say, I told you so, and just revel in the fact that Dr. Frankenstein is being eaten by his own monster, because these are leftists who have engaged in cancel culture in the past and who have pushed these ideas that have helped create this culture. But at the same time, the monster is still wreaking havoc and can still hopefully be stopped before it's too late. And I'm hoping that more and more people wake up to this and help fight it and not have to wait until they're the ones who are canceled to realize how bad it is. But I mean, at this point, everyone might as well go ahead and just be preemptively canceled, because there's nothing and no one that can possibly pass the woke purity test. Eventually, we will all be heretics. That's the way this works. Okay, one last story I want to address really quickly that also helps encapsulate the absurdity that is going on in America is Joe Biden's mental and physical condition. So the man fell up the stairs going up to Air Force One, not once, not twice, but three times. Fell three times on the stairs. It's a miracle he didn't fall down the stairs. That would have been really awful, really bad, especially at his age. Now look, there's nothing particularly strange about falling on the stairs. It happens all the time. You miss a step, you lose your footing, you can't regain your balance. It happens to the best of us, no matter how coordinated you are. But if you remember, the media spent an exorbitant amount of time playing armchair doctor when President Trump grabbed a handrail or used two hands to drink his water or whatever it was. Just ridiculous. They were running all kinds of stories about his deteriorating medical condition. And now we have a president who is in clear, undeniable cognitive decline and showing clear signs of physical decline as well, including a shuffling gait and frequent falls. Remember, Biden had a fall not long ago where he fractured his ankle. And normally, when an elderly person has multiple falls like that in a relatively short period of time, it's bad news. And when you couple that with the cognitive issues, the outlook is not so bright. But our media is determined to put on the blindfold and pretend like everything's fine and that none of this matters. Never mind that Russia is calling us out. Iran is calling us out, recognizing our weakness. And this whole falling incident was following Tony Blinken's disastrous meeting with the Chinese Communist Party representatives, where they just destroyed him to his face, said that the United States does not have the qualification to speak to China from a position of strength. And it's just hilarious because Blinken is sitting there like an idiot next to a staffer with purple hair. I mean, if that isn't just the perfect metaphor for what's going on in this country, Biden falling up the stairs and Blinken getting owned by the CCP while sitting next to a staffer with purple hair. It's just perfectly symbolic of the fact that leftist ideology has exponentially weakened America and has turned our country into a running joke. But hey, at least people can choose their gender on government documents, right? The whole world has gone mad. One of the things I've noticed, well, not just me, but a lot of people have pointed this out, but we seem to be living through a time period that is the antithesis of the Enlightenment. We are no longer in the age of reason, and there is no value in liberalism for many people. And I say liberalism in its classical sense, the embrace of liberty and individual rights, free markets, freedom of religion. And these are Enlightenment ideals. And we're now in a time period that is openly hostile toward these things. So I asked on Twitter what we should call this time period that we're living through. And there were some good ones. Some of the best ones were the Great Regression, the Dark Ages, part two, the Anti-Enlightenment, Dark Winter, the Great Lobotomy, and Idiocracy, of course. Yeah, a lot of responses there. Most people agreeing with either Idiocracy or some form of a new Dark Age, which both are very fitting. But yeah, man, I don't know. I'm just tired, frustrated, exhausted. And I realize that I'm a minority voice. And those of you who agree with this particular viewpoint are a minority voice in the grand scheme of things. And the cacophony of insanity just happens to be much louder and more obnoxious. And so it gets far more attention and is much more influential. And I mean, it's everywhere. And that makes it tough because you feel like you're always on defense, right? Always responding to the prevailing narratives and batting them down and trying to refute the nonsense that is being perpetually pumped into the veins of our society every single day. And a lot of days, it really feels like trying to empty the ocean with a ladle, you know? But we keep going anyway. I'm reminded of a story about a boy and his father walking along the beach. And there are a bunch of starfish that have been washed ashore as far as they could see. So the little boy picks one up and puts it back into the water. Then he picks another one up and puts it back into the water. After he does this for a while, his father looks down at him and he says, "Son, you can't save them all." And the little boy looks up at his dad and he says, "But I can save this one." So we keep after it. We keep pushing. We keep fighting. And no matter what, we keep speaking the truth. Because we might not be able to help everyone, but we can help someone. Thanks for listening. I'm Leonidas, and this has been Informed Dissent.
If you would like to help support the show through donation, you can do so at donorbox.org/Leonidas. DonorBox.org/Leonidas. I really appreciate that. If you enjoyed this episode, make sure you subscribe, give it a 5-star rating, share with your friends. Also, follow me on social media at Leonidas Johnson. And check out my website at LeonidasJohnson.com. And always remember, do your own research. Challenge everything. Don't be afraid to stand up for what you believe. We'll see you next week. God bless.